This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world.
Today on Dreamland, I have a guest you do not know. Joe Lules has been a friend of mine for a long time. He has been part of the UFO community for many years. We were both dear friends, friends of John Mack. We'll be talking about that a little bit. And we were friends with quite a number of people, as other people in the field as well. Joe has been working with this whole issue, and we're going to ask him to begin in a moment what got him started. He is from El Paso, and he has written about something I think is quite important, which is the idea of the soul trap. And are we in one? Is that what this is actually all about? I wrote a little blurb for his new book called The Soul Trap, Exploring the Mysteries of Faith and Life with Joe Lules is Enriching and Most Worthwhile. And that is exactly correct. Joe, welcome to Dreamland.
Thank you, Whitley. I really appreciate it. It's so good to see you. Don't get to see you that often. But it's been 30 years since we first met at the UFO conference in Brisbane, Australia in 1996, where we first met. And we've been good friends ever since. We hit it off. I always admired your writing. And when I saw your book, Communion, on a bookstore shelf back in 1987, I was shocked because I knew who you were. I had read your books, and I thought you were a brilliant writer and a very smart man who was taking great risk to come out and write about his own abduction experience. And I knew then that somehow I needed to get involved in this. And I started the MUFON chapter in El Paso in 1993, and I started interviewing abductees with a team of psychiatrists, certified hypnotherapists, and we got tons of people coming to us for help. And a lot of that has to do with that book, Communion. It woke up the world. There are people still today who are talking about how that book impacted them and how the cover of your book impacted them. And I thank you so much for letting me use the image from the cover of your book as an image in my first chapter, which is all about you. Thank you for letting me write about your personal life, because it's crucial. That it was crucial to what I was trying to get across to my readers. And I am so blessed to be able to say that Whitley Strieber has been my friend for 30 years.
Well, thank you, Joe. And I'm blessed to say that Joe Lules has been my friend for 30 years. And I remember that conference in Sydney. No, it was in Melbourne.
Brisbane. Yeah.
Brisbane, was it? Brisbane, yeah, very fondly. And you may think, folks, that I actually don't remember it because I got the city name wrong twice. But that's okay.
Okay. You've been to more conferences than I've been to. So.
Oh, God. Yes, yeah. I have. I always enjoy them, though. I think when I get invited to one, I think, I don't want to go to another conference.
Yeah.
And then I think, oh, yes, you do, Phil.
Yeah.
And
you want to be surrounded. You know, you want to be surrounded by people who know what's going on, you know?
You do need that from time to time, because I'm mostly surrounded by people who are snickering at me and making rectal probe jokes.
Exactly.
Including most of my family and friends.
Yeah. And for me, here in El Paso, which is very a backwater, the parties that you go to and the functions, there's nobody that understands anything about it. So you end up talking with the guys about football, and the girls go off to a corner and they talk about the girl stuff, but nobody's talking. And if you ever do bring up the issue of UFOs, they think you're nuts still today. You know, they don't know anything about it. It just, and there's so much available on Well, I've been watching YouTube and amazed at how much I have learned from people like Ross Coulthart, who is from Australia. He does wonderful interviews. And then the people that are running the Skywatcher program, and actually psychically bringing entities or things down from space to within an area where they can actually be videotaped. Have you been watching that?
Well, I'm kind of confused by Skywatcher, and the reason I'm confused is I know hundreds of people who can do the same thing without any special psionics or equipment or anything.
Yeah,
I know
but
a
they're not, they don't have the high tech video cameras
Yes, they
to
do. I'm
otherwise.
sorry. They certainly
Well,
do,
okay.
but
Well,
they're
my
not.
introduction has been to through Skywatchers on YouTube. I don't know the other people that do that.
Yeah, well, they're mostly just ordinary people, but some of them have got really good equipment and do it every night. It's the thing is, it's not a big deal until it gets elevated into something special with special psionics experts and all kinds of fancy equipment. Then it looks like a really big deal and something hard to do. Which it isn't. Melinda Leslie in Sedona takes tours out every night and they see UFOs every night.
But
And
these people are doing it during the day.
well, that's right. They are doing it during the day. And
That's
I listen, I've got plenty of video from people who do the same thing, do it during the day.
yeah. And then
And
there's the guy in North Carolina, Chris Bledsoe, that is can call in UAPs whenever he wants to. You know, he's had
well, he can call them in sometimes. Let's be accurate here.
okay, but
He,
a
uh,
lot
I,
of high-ranking government people have witnessed it.
Jim Semivan being the person involved and who is a
Yeah.
good friend of mine, and Jim some years ago did see this happen. That's not, I'm not saying Chris isn't legitimate, but we can't overstate the case. John Martin is he in South Carolina? No, I guess he's in, well, I forget what state he's in. It's a southern state, Memphis, Tennessee or South Carolina, I believe. And he tapes them all the time and sits on
Well,
his porch with
I'm
his
not aware.
guitar, playing his guitar, and they come and he videos them.
Oh, wow.
So it's,
Cool. That's amazing.
we have to be very careful here. This is something that belongs to the people. It doesn't
Absolutely.
belong to the special
Yeah.
guys with secret government connections and
Yeah,
stuff.
no, I agree. I agree. And I'm just mentioning this is something that I just learned. You know, I didn't know about this, but let me talk a little bit about this idea of Earth being the soul trap,
Well,
because
wait a minute,
that's very important.
Joe,
Huh?
let's do this. Let's do this in order.
Okay.
Then the
I
first
didn't
thing,
know there was an order. Okay.
oh, there's an order, all right.
All
There's a
right.
whole show all written out.
Oh.
So
Okay.
just
All right.
relax, and
Yeah.
I'll take care of the questions.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Now, the first thing I want to talk about, though, is something that happened many years ago at the plantation, the Medway Plantation. Owned by Lawrence Rockefeller. You were there. I was
Yes.
there.
Ed Mitchell.
Edgar Mitchell was there, and John was there, and
John
Anne
Hamm.
was there. And I don't recall if your wife came.
No,
No, she
no.
didn't. And someone was also with John, and I don't recall her name.
Yeah.
And Edgar was by himself.
Yes.
And we met there for the purpose of having a private discussion about the phenomenon and trading basically things that we weren't saying publicly.
Right.
And I found it a remarkable meeting. And
Yes.
I think I would like to ask you. And I will contribute some of my own thoughts, of course, your thoughts about the meeting.
I was so honored to be invited. I believe John Mack put me on the list because I have been having a lot of communication with John about his cases that he was studying and the cases I had in El Paso, and our agreement that these beings were not just aliens from other planets, that it was far more interesting that these beings seem to us to be, first of all, a very ancient phenomena, that it was not something new, and that they seem to be interdimensional more than from other planets, although other planets do get involved in some of the cases that I have. But we kept bouncing this off of each other. I mean, these guys are like more like angels or gods because of all the things that they can do. They can manipulate the material world with their minds. They can walk through walls. Their craft fly right through mountains. It'll go underwater. And I mean, it's like they do much more than what we would expect just aliens from other planets to be able to do. And also, we were both up against the duo of Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, who were saying that this was something evil, that they were here to take over the planet, and that hybrid kids were part of a program to be helping the aliens take over the world at some time in the future. That kind of thinking was just abhorrent to us. So it was almost like it was you, me, John, a few others who were had to stand up to these bozos who were saying these crazy things.
Now, John later on became much more friendly with Bud Hopkins. At that time, he felt like Bud Hopkins was very wrong.
Well, Bud had attacked him. Bud and David had
Yeah,
attacked him.
I've noticed that. He attacked a lot of people, including
Yeah,
me.
yeah, yeah. For as being like New Age, whatever they call it, they had a name for people who
Yes.
thought there was anything that had to do with spirituality.
Or people who sold more books than they did. That was another problem they had with both me and John.
Yeah, and, they were so into this atheistic way of thinking, and they never talked about their religious backgrounds. I never heard them
No,
mention.
because Bud did not believe in anything. He
Yes,
didn't believe in the soul.
I think David Jacobs was the same.
I
And
have
they
no
said,
idea about David, but I had discussions with Bud about this, and
and
he said that this is what we are and this is what we have.
right. So when you believe that, you run into a dead end right away with this
Yeah,
phenomenon.
like the
Because this,
entire scientific community has run into,
yeah,
and they're
exactly.
now at the far edge of quantum physics and can't figure out where they are.
Exactly. Well, they're still, and this amazes me, our top scientists are still relying on that old kind of science that relies on the scientific method. The idea, and the scientific method relies on the idea that everything is separate, that we are separate from each other, we're separate from the planet, we're separate from the labs and the rat, the rats that are running around our maze that we do experiments on. And that if everything is separate, we can study them objectively. That's the whole idea behind the scientific method. But quantum physics has shown that and this has been known for many, many years, since probably the 30s and 40s, that there is no separation. Separation is an illusion. And in fact, we're all one, and everything is one at the subatomic level. And so objectivity doesn't work. It's a false notion, just as the scientific method is a false notion. And that's why I relied on finding information by not just doing interviews, but helping people through hypnotherapy to not just remember what happened to them when they had the missing time they were aboard the ships and all that, but also to do past life work with them so that people could learn that they were more than just their bodies.
Now, the first chapter of your book is called We Recycle Souls,
That's
based
from
on,
the first chapter of Community.
yes, I know, that's right, and from my book.
Yeah. And
And
that when
I
I
think
read
it.
that the first time, it scared the hell out of me. I remember reading that in 2 nights. It was the most frightening book you ever wrote, much scarier than The Hunger or any of those scary novels. This one scared the hell out of me. The other ones were fun. And I remember finishing the book. I handed the book to my wife, Hilda, who is a confirmed Catholic and always will be and has been. She read the first few pages. She threw the book across the room. She said, "I'm not going to read that." It scared the hell out of her. Just the first chapter, she wouldn't read it. But that's the
I
way
can't
we
say
read
that
it.
I blame her.
Yeah.
But that phrase, we recycle souls, is huge because it's, first of all, it recognizes the existence of souls.
Right.
And if you don't do that, like a lot of the people in these the government people who are seeking to capture agency in the whole field,
Yeah.
basically don't believe they have souls.
Exactly.
Therefore, they cannot do this. It's not
No.
possible.
Right.
It's exactly like trying to climb a mountain with no legs. You can't
Right.
do it without
Yeah.
and now the other word is recycle.
Yes.
Recycle souls. And you, I know, have gone into an enormous, long life journey exploring reincarnation in many different ways.
Yeah.
But you started out wanting to talk about the words, the soul trap. You
Yeah.
began that. And so now it's time to get into that. What exactly do you mean when you say the soul trap? The name of title of your book, why did you choose to call it, say, not soul freedom or soul rescue, but the soul trap?
Well, simply because the point I wanted to get across was the point that if you don't even know that you have a soul, then you're going to be stuck in this trap of the material world over and over and over and over again. And this place is not really that much fun. If you look around, there's always chaos everywhere. Look at what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. Look at Gaza and the Israelis against the Palestinians who aren't even armed. Look at the genocide and the madness that's going on. Look at our politics, and everything on planet Earth has always been chaos. And the reason that it's chaos is because we come into this world with our memories of our past lives having been erased intentionally. And so we don't realize that we've lived before. We don't realize that we have a soul. And we go around acting like we're just these flesh and blood and bone bodies that we see in the mirror. And that's dangerous. It just results in chaos and horrible things. If you know you
Could
have a
it be, Joe, could it be that there is someone in the hidden in the shadows who doesn't want us to know we have souls
I
in
think
order that
that's,
we will recycle?
yeah, I think that's right. And they're up there. These are what I would call celestial beings who, let me just go back a bit, because the idea that Earth is a soul trap is a very, very ancient one. And I found references going back into way before the time of Christ, There was a Greek philosopher that many people haven't heard of. I didn't put him in the book because I didn't want the book to be too long, but his name was Anaxagoras, a philosopher that lived just before Plato. And in fact, he died the year Plato was born. But this guy, he believed and preached panspermia, that life came from elsewhere in the universe. Can you believe this? This is back in 500 BC. He believed that there was a being that he called the Great Archon, who created the material world, and that his purpose for doing it was to imprison souls. This goes back way, way back. This is not a new idea. And he called these divine sparks that he wanted to imprison in the material world. And this idea continues through ancient Greek tradition, through Plato and people beyond. That's why Plato taught us about reincarnation. Anaxagoras taught us about that. But somehow, into the modern age, the idea of reincarnation, being trapped, souls being trapped in the material world intentionally by higher beings, that idea was done away with by early Christianity.
Well, you know, we're going to get in just a moment, get into why that is, because after all, as you will see in a moment, the idea of reincarnation was well accepted. Now it's a kind of secret. We're in denial about it. That makes us even weaker, even more vulnerable. We'll be right back.
The Fourth Mind, Whitley Strieber's explosive new book. The first time alien anatomy, alien genetics, the alien brain, and the alien mind have ever been detailed publicly. Learn how they think. Learn what they believe. Learn what we mean to them. Learn when they are coming and why. Then, in part two, learn why we don't have powers like telepathy, levitation, and healing that they do have. Find out about the catastrophe that took our powers from us. Find out how we can regain them. The Fourth Mind, totally new, incredibly important. Get your copy today on Amazon. Available as a Kindle, hardcover, softcover, and an audiobook read by Whitley Strieber.
UAPs, aliens, magic, breakthrough tech, psi phenomenon, esoterica, psychedelics, cryptids, time slips, poltergeists, and sundry. The days of dismissing these complicated human experiences as mere delusions, hoaxes, fantasies, and dreams needs to be over. Instead, we need to explore and understand these events for what they might be telling us about the nature of the universe and of ourselves. The ancients taught that we're each an energetic expression of the living cosmos, but we still don't know what that means. What is real? What is fantasy? How do each of our lives and experiences fit within the broader tapestry of being? Are we alone? Where does narrative fit? And what happens when we die? Join me on Neon Galactic, a podcast produced by yours truly, to push the boundaries of old paradigms in science, philosophy, ontology, anthropology, and more. This show is an experiment in radical hermeneutics, breaking down old walls to embrace the strange and existentially transformative, to get beyond old prejudices and realize at last that we are indeed more complicated and connected as a species than many of us ever dreamed. Find me on Patreon, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts to take a journey to unknown places on a quest to the limits of this reality and beyond. At such a fraught and dangerous moment in human history, the time has definitely come to reassess the wisdom of our ancestors and embrace the natural truths we've long rejected. Join our intrepid crew in throwing open the gates of perception to welcome wonder back into the workaday world.
We're talking to Joe Lules. Joe's new book, The Soul Trap. Barry Downing, whom we both have known for a long time, the author of The Bible and Flying Saucers, a really interesting guy, has a very interesting take on all of this, says the next
Presbyterian minister.
An excellent combination of what we have learned from ET contact and the history of religion in the West. The two things are so intimately connected. Now, we were talking just a moment ago about reincarnation, and it's denied by the, I believe, by the Catholic Church, and maybe most of the modern Christian congregations. Yeah. But one of the central features of the Testament is that John the Baptist was the reincarnation of Elijah.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
According to Jesus.
It only worked for John the Baptist, but not the rest of us. I mean,
yeah, that's crazy. And in fact, you know, the ancient Hebrews believed that their patriarchs were reincarnations of previous prophets. And what I discovered, which is I think amazing, through my study of the Dead Sea Scrolls, which I have spent countless hours poring over, and reading a book by one of the original Dead Sea Scrolls scholars who was not a Catholic priest, a man by the name of John Allegro. He deduced that that Jesus had been a member of the Essene sect living on the shores of the Dead Sea, that name Jesus was important. In the Bible, it only shows, in the Christian Bible, it just says that the angel told Mary, the Virgin Mary, that she would be having a son and his name would be Jesus. I always wondered when I was studying the Bible, why was it Jesus? Well, there was a reason. It's because in the Essene belief system, their Messiah would be the reincarnation of the patriarch Joshua, who was Moses' right-hand man. And that means that their Messiah would be born into the Essene community and be named Joshua, or as it was called back then, Yeshua. So Yeshua Joshua is a translation of Yeshua from the ancient Hebrew language, and then it was translated into Greek as Jesus. So Jesus, Joshua, Yeshua, same name. The reason that she was told her, the name would be Jesus, because the Essenes believed that their Messiah would be the reincarnation of the earlier Yeshua, who we know as Joshua. This is an amazing story. Okay. It tells you something that I knew, that Jesus was part of the Essene community and his family were all parts of the Essene community. John the Baptist, his second cousin, was a member of the Essene community. That's where in the Bible, it says John the Baptist grew up in the wilderness. Well, yeah, Qumran in the Judean desert is the wilderness. And that's where John the Baptist and Jesus, both as children, grew up and were taught by the Essenes. This is an important fact because in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's clear that the people who lived on the shores of the Dead Sea, the Essenes, were deathly afraid of the Pharisees who controlled the Jerusalem temple. They were so afraid, they thought their lives were at stake if they were found out. So they wrote in the Dead Sea Scrolls about themselves, never using real names, only titles, so that you can't say, oh, that's Jesus, because their Messiah was called the Teacher of Righteousness. I can't think of a better name for Jesus than the Teacher of Righteousness. So this is very important. I bring this out in the book, the connection to the Essene community. And the reason that I know for certainty that is the case is because when I did my own, when I had a past life regression done on me, I found myself there at Qumran on the shores of the Dead Sea with the Dead Sea Scroll jars lined up neatly for me on the beach. And what What took my consciousness to that spot was a crucifix that appeared right in front of my face and just took me, my consciousness with it. The crucifix disappeared, and there I was on the shores of the Dead Sea with the scroll jars. And what that left me with was the knowledge that there was a connection between the crucifixion and Jesus and the Essenes. And I had to, from that point on, I devoted my almost my whole attention to finding out what that connection was.
In light of that, let's talk a little bit more about reincarnation. Contextually, what you understand to be the mechanics of it, and how what happened to you then informs your understanding of reincarnation.
Yeah, it does. Well, when I started looking into reincarnation, it was really by accident. What happened was I have to tell a little bit of my religious background. I was born into a Catholic family who later converted to Protestantism. We were Presbyterians for most of my teenage years. So we were, it was a Bible church. So we studied the Bible in every which way possible, except the correct way, because they really didn't know about the Bible. Even our minister, who had a doctor of theology degree, was just followed the party line and didn't. And even though he knew that there are no original copies of the Bible, the Bible are what we know as today's Christian Bible is just copies of copies of copies of copies of things that were written many years ago, and many different hands tainted the originals, so that today other people's ideas, not the ideas of Jesus, got involved in putting their own ideas forth in the New Testament Gospels. So I had to find out what it really was about, what it really meant. I didn't start that until I was middle-aged, when I started that MUFON chapter in El Paso, and we started interviewing abductees, who I prefer to call experiencers. Right away, in the first, and I wasn't doing the hypnosis then, I became a certified hypnotherapist later, but we had a certified hypnotherapist who was also a professor of sociology at the community college, and had been a Catholic priest in his past life, not past life, in early life, but he left the church to marry and raise a family. Great guy. Anyway, he did this one of the first regressions to try to help a woman find out about her missing time and her UFO experiences. And what happened is instead she started talking about a past life, first in France, where she lived in the 1700s, and speaking in French. And then she went on to remember a life where she was handing out loaves of bread to a bunch of people on the side of a mountain where she called him the master, was going to speak. And she was amazed under hypnosis that every time she took out a loaf of bread to give to people, and there were thousands, that the basket never emptied. And this is a story straight out of the New Testament. And I just didn't know what to make of this, because we were there to study UFOs and abductions. And that's not where this woman's subconscious was taking us. So, but what was really strange was that you would think that the person remembering being on the Sermon on the Mount, as it's called in the New Testament, clearly that's where she was, that she would have been a devout Christian. But when she came out of the trance and we debriefed her, it turned out that she's Jewish. And she was not a believer in Jesus as God or Savior or whatever. She was Jewish, and she did not want to admit that the master that she followed in that past life was Jesus. I mean, why would someone remember a past life that contradicted their current belief system? And that really puzzled me. How does that work? Well, what I finally found out was that this happens all the time. People who remember past lives remember things that contradict their personal beliefs in this current life. And that shows me that what they're remembering is true, because you wouldn't do that naturally. And that got me interested in reincarnation. But it wasn't because I was looking for it. It was because it just came out during our early interviews and work with experiencers back in 1993. That's a long story, I'm sorry, but that's how it happened.
Okay, well, we'll take that under advisement.
Yeah.
And when we get back, we're going to take a little break right now. We're going to be talking about someone we all think about but don't understand. We'll be right. Who are they? Why are they here? What do they want with us? Why is it all so secret? All of these questions are explored in my new book, Them, in an entirely new way. What do Close Encounter reports tell us about what the visitors want with us? What is the military's experience? And can our memories be trusted? Can anything be trusted? Them answers all of these questions in a totally new way. It's available in hardcover, soft cover, as a Kindle, and as an audiobook, read by me. Get Them today, and you can get it from the unknowncountry.com store, signed by me.
There is zero doubt.
Classified programs exist behind the scenes. We are beyond the realm of speculation.
The U.S. government is operating with secrecy above congressional oversight with regards to UAPs. The truth is out there. We just need to be bold enough and brave enough to face it.
Back. We're talking to Joe Lules, his new book, The Soul Trap. Is this a soul trap? Is that where we are? Let's talk about the Watchers. Now, everyone probably listening to this show knows a little bit about the Watchers. Some of us may know a lot about the Watchers. But let me start with this question. They certainly figure very prominently in Soul Trap.
Yes.
Who are the Watchers?
That's a very good question, Whitley. The Watchers, the name the Watchers first appears in the ancient books of Enoch. And interestingly, among the Dead Sea Scrolls, there are certain categories of Dead Sea Scrolls that they found. Most of the Dead Sea Scrolls are books of the Old Testament. Okay, that's the number one category. But the second category of the most number of books among the Dead Sea Scrolls are the books of Enoch. And Enoch was said to have been someone who lived in the pre-Antediluvian world, where before the Great Flood. And who was the father of Noah, and he was among the great patriarchs, the ones that lived for hundreds of years, as per the Old Testament. And the Watchers are prominent in the books of Enoch as beings from the skies, the heavens, angelic beings who watch over the earth, whose job is to watch over the earth. That's why they're called the Watchers. I call them the rulers of the earth. And what is described in the books of Enoch is that in the long ago time, there were some Watchers who broke away from the group and they came down to Earth and they mated with Earth, with human women, to create a hybrid species that were known as the Nephilim. And so this story goes on and on. There's a lot to know about the Watchers and how and how they related to the human race. But actually, I think the Watchers are just another term for what we today call aliens, what other people, well, for example, there's so many names in a lot of the ancient texts, like the one that I talked about, where this ancient prophet, not prophet, philosopher Anaxagoras, he called these beings archons. That's the first place where I found the word archon. And in the Gnostic text, which we'll talk about later, I hope, they're called archons rather than watchers. We call them aliens. Other people call them Francis Crick, who was the co-discoverer of the double helix nature of the DNA molecule, in his book Life Itself, 1981, he came upon the idea that there were such beings who created life, who brought life to Earth, seeded life on Earth, and he finally ended up calling them the cosmic game wardens, because he hypothesized that after seeding life on Earth, these beings from somewhere else would come by and check on their garden of life and tinker with it from time to time. So this is a Nobel laureate, Francis Crick, who termed these beings that he theorized about cosmic game wardens. Other places they're called rulers, or in the Gnostic Gospels, those Gospels that didn't make it into the New Testament, they're called archons. But I think we're all talking about the same thing: beings that are powerful, creators of the material world, and who rule over us and can do whatever they want with us. And some of them want to keep us trapped in the material world. There are others who want to help us to get out. And
you know, it reminds me of a moment in my own life. Years and years ago, when my brother came to the cabin a few months after the event, the communion was published, and I was showing him around and feeling very much the cock of the walk. And we went down to the little clearing where I had been taken by, from which I had been abducted. And on the way down, I heard a voice in my head, the voice of the lady on the cover of Communion, say, "Arrogance, I can do whatever I wish to you."
Yes.
But it was not someone destructive, but someone who was teaching. Because it was the fundamental beginning lesson of my whole life with the visitors.
Yeah.
My brother and I and some other friends who were with us then immediately thereafter had an absolutely extraordinary UFO sighting in the clearing. A big UFO that came down and was no question about what it was. And I was thinking to myself about, of course, that voice. I was thinking, oh dear, you've gotten yourself into Dutch again. But, you know, they didn't pick me because I'm not going to get myself into trouble, clearly. Anyway, the next day, all the money I had in the world just disappeared from the bank. It just disappeared. I ended up with like $20 in my wallet, and that was everything I had. And the bank manager calling me saying, "Mr. Streber, we've got all these bills that we've got. We can't, we're going to have to send them. We're going to have to send all the checks back because you don't have any money with us anymore." And finally, they found the money by going into tapes in some deep archive, the backup tapes the bank kept. And wow, the money came back to me. That was a lesson.
A lesson.
a lesson from a watcher
who in humility. A lesson in humility.
In humility from a watcher who does have our best interests at heart.
Yeah.
And I have trusted the visitors who are in my life ever since because of that. And I've tried hard to at least pretend to be a humble man. But let's talk a little bit more about the relationship between the tall bonds, the grays, the Nordics, and you mentioned the reptilians, which I don't think I know anything about. I've never met them, I don't believe. But anyway, let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, in my research, which, as I said, it's still ongoing. I'm still working on cases. Not many, but people come to me for help, so I try to help them. But early on, we started running into the reptilians. It was not something that people wanted to remember because they are ugly. They are hard to look at because they're so frightening. They play a part in a lot of cases. And in the research that I was doing, which was basically reading the work of Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, who were the experts on this, I never heard anything about reptilians. But we were getting a lot of reptilian cases. It turns out that others were too, but they weren't writing about them. It was too scary. It was too satanic, too biblical that there would be such beings. You know, I mean, reptilian sentient beings who are more powerful than we. They didn't want to talk about it. Finally, John Mack called me one day in 2003. The year before he died, and he said, Joe, he says, I got to write about reptilians. I want to put all of our reptilian cases together, including those of Barbara Lamb, another researcher well recognized, and the three of us are going to put all our research about reptilians together. He called it the Reptilian Project, and then we were going to write either a book or a long article. Or at least start by speaking at a conference about it. And then he went off to London and he got killed over there, and he never got back to help us finish the project. But he was.
You know, I have to say, just to interrupt you, I have always wondered about that. I've researched it pretty deeply. I have even talked to some of the people who were involved directly, were there. And it seems quite clear that John died in what, in our level of reality, is an accident, a genuine, legitimate accident.
I believe
he stepped out into the street, looked the wrong way because it was late, and he'd probably had some wine and what or whatnot, and he looked the wrong way because he was in London and the traffic goes the opposite direction. He made a classic tourist mistake.
Right.
And there was a driver racing along at the usual breakneck speed of the English and not very sober.
He was drunk, yeah.
Drunk.
The drunk driver.
And John was killed. But the Archons have the reptilians, I guess, too, and I relate the two, actually, have a much more control over our lives and movements than it appears.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered if they just didn't want John around anymore.
You know, I don't know. I have not allowed my mind to go there. I prefer to think of it as an untimely accident that was really so sad, and it left me shaken, and it left me feeling quite alone. Because we were of the same mind when it came to what this was all about. Barbara Lamb and I went ahead and spoke at the Laughlin Conference, International UFO Congress, on the subject. And we shared our our cases at that time with the people there. It's on video. It's probably on YouTube someplace. But, that's just one of the types of beings that I've run into with my research. There's the mantis beings that play a prominent role, and almost like even maybe more in control than some of the others. It's very hard to know. I've run into cases where in the same place, on the same craft, you find the little grays, the tall grays, a tall blonde, a mantis being, and a reptilian. I mean, it's not, and I don't think they're all working together for the same purpose, but it's very hard to discern what the relationships are between them.
I've had that experience too. I've encountered, or I should say, been introduced to a Nordic who proceeded to warn me that the Greys were very dangerous and we must never start a war with them. If we did, they would never let us win and never let us stop fighting. And now I see all this video appearing of us shooting it at their ship.
Oh, yeah.
I think to myself, that's really stupid.
It's stupid. Yes, we've been shooting at UFOs for forever. You know, that's our human response.
The most basic fundamentals of strategy are don't shoot at what you don't know.
That's
number one. And number two is do not engage an enemy unless you know
his capability.
No, it more important than his capabilities. You need to know your own capabilities, but you also need to know his supply line.
Yeah.
And we don't know
their
supply line. We can't follow it back.
Yeah.
And I mean, we don't, the Native American communities who were successful in their fights against the horse soldiers.
Yes.
Always were successful because they were able to get back to the camps that it originated. And that's why they fortified the frontier line all up and down the United States from Texas all the way to the Canadian border, because they couldn't win against the Indians unless they had those fortifications, because the Indians would sneak around behind them and wreck their camps and leave them isolated out in the middle of the desert with a few exhausted horses.
Yeah, and at that point, the Great Plains belonged to the Indians. They knew how to get around the Great Plains.
Right.
But it was like an ocean of mystery to the settlers, because they didn't know how to navigate through waist tall grass that went on for hundreds and hundreds of miles, but the Indians knew that.
Well, let's stay with the. I'm digressing here, and I'm being a bad boy. But what's new about that? I want to move on here a little bit. We're talking about the roles of, like, the Greys. How do you see the role of the Greys?
Well, there's the short grays that are, I've come to think of them as more robotic. Their purpose is they do their job. They go and they get the person, put them on a ship. They take them to put them on a little ship, take them to the big ship. They have certain functions, but it's the tall grays that I believe are in charge of the little grays. Nevertheless, they are powerful entities. I mean, they, like I said, they walk right through walls. They take people up through their ceilings. It's like, this is not something that an alien from another planet can do. Okay. I can't imagine that the word alien is a proper name for these beings. They're very powerful. They can do whatever. They don't seem powerful because they're so small, the little ones, but apparently they can control a human quite easily. But by putting them into some kind of a state where they can't fight back, because if the human could fight back, could quite easily probably knock the head off one of those little grays. So they immobilize people. But they are the ones that are doing the hybrid program. But also, I think what we have to realize is that the reptilians are also doing their own hybrid program. And I have had cases where a woman who came to me for help discovered that she had half human, half reptilian children on board of a spacecraft or one of their craft. And she wasn't happy with it. I mean, she was shown the child as an infant, didn't remember it. Of course, came through hypnotherapy. She was able to recover those memories. And that gets us to a point, you know, how accurate is hypnotherapy? And what I have found is hypnotherapy is extremely accurate if it's done by a professional certified hypnotherapist, which I was, and the people that we used. And also, we also had always had psychiatrists involved. And so hypnotherapy has proven to me to be accurate because I have tried, and others have tried, to mislead someone who's under hypnosis into a direction that we know is a false pathway, and they always push back. None of them ever follow that lead. People under hypnosis are not suggestible, at least in the way that I do hypnosis, and my team did it. Now, there are hypnotists who they do it for fun on a stage, and they can get people to act like a chicken and you know, all that stuff. But in those cases, the people in the audience have all volunteered to go on stage, and they know they're going to be doing stupid things, okay? That's not hypnotherapy. That's just hypnosis. Hypnotherapy is the person doing the hypnosis is a therapist, and that is what I decided. When I started doing it, I knew that I couldn't just be a hypnotist, that I had to actually help people. And so in the process, I had to be sure that they were coming up with factual information. So I would always throw in a misleading question to try to get them off track. It never worked. So I think the work we did, which uncovered the different types of beings, and there's probably others that we don't know about, was accurate information.
I agree with you there. And, you know, we're going to come to the end of the free part of the show, and I'm going to, when we get back, I want to be, to talk about the way we are bound by the archons. In other words, the material world is the soul trap. This is the soul trap. And how we are bound here. And can we escape after all? I think that the great promise of my life, given to me by grays who want us to escape, is that, yes, we can. But we're going to get into that more deeply because there's so much confusion about who they are. The grays are good guys, or are they bad guys? The reptilians, you think they'd always be bad guys because they're so ugly, but is that really true? And what about the mysterious presence of the tall blondes? And the Nordics, for that matter, what happened to them? We don't talk about them anymore, hardly, because they don't seem to be here anymore. So we're going to unpack all of that stuff and try to maybe at least turn on a bit of light down a road that leads out of the soul trap Free Dreamlanders, goodbye. I love you, and I want you to stay with the show. Tell your friends about it. Subscribers will keep on keeping on. And I urge everybody to buy The Soul Trap. Get the book. Get it from the unknowncountry.com store. Get it from Amazon. But get it. It's a small book. It's not self-published, but it's published by a small publisher, because a book like this, the big publishers will never publish it. Never right. publish it. Because they're in the soul trap and they can't get out.
Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of unknowncountry.com is Anne Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.